You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey everyone, I'm so excited for today. I have no doubt in this conversation, you are going to glean a ton of knowledge. So I am with Jonathan Pirelli, and he is the CEO and co-founder of Life Fuels, his seventh startup. Prior to Life Fuels, Jonathan served as the founder of six companies, five of which were acquired. His most recent exit was the 2014 sale of SecureForce, a cybersecurity firm in Washington, D.C. An early stage technology investor, Jonathan founded Fortify Ventures in 2011 and has invested in over 50 early stage and emerging technology companies during his career. So that means we get to talk about what makes a company successful and what makes it viable. So I'm so excited, but I got more to say. He co-created the pitch event series Distilled Intelligence and co-founded the Fort, Washington, D.C.'s first tech accelerator. And while operating the Fort, Jonathan teamed up with film director Justin Gutwein to create Startup Land, a documentary and educational series about the five companies participating in the Fort's second class. StartupLand.tv has premiered in over 75 countries since March of 2014 and is now accompanied by a 15-week online course for entrepreneurs. Jonathan currently serves as a founder circle and board member to the Virginia Tech Apex System Center of Innovation and Entrepreneurship. He is also an advisory board member to the Vignetta Project and serves on the board of directors of IntroHive, Talk Local, and Inertial Labs. He is a frequent speaker on topics related to entrepreneurship, fundraising, accelerator, startup ecosystems, and building emerging technology companies. He is also a single father of three young children. Jonathan strives to achieve balance between life fuels, travel, family activities, and everything in between. Jonathan is a graduate and active alum of Virginia Tech, where he studied psychology, computer science, finance, and the science of beverages, which of course, I mean, who doesn't, right? Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's so good to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate being invited to be on the show.
Yeah, we have so much to dig into. But before we do that, is there anything else that our listeners need to know about you?
Well, we mentioned the children. I have three amazing kids, ages 12, 11, and 9. They're what their mother and I refer to as our hearts with legs. As part of the story of my life, you know, everything centers around family and, you know, nothing, a day doesn't go by that I'm excited to see them because I have them half the time and also, excited to participate in all their activities. They're pretty busy.
And, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, I have an 8 and a 12-year-old, two boys, and they just keep you thinking differently about things. Kids are just so creative and interested in life and curious and just kind of forces you to stay that way.
Yeah, no question. And I know we just became friends on Facebook. You can find some of the quotes I often post just to entertain family members and friends who know the kids. The things that they say, the questions they ask, their personalities kind of come to life as sort of a baby book extended version. and their mother and I share those things and tag each other on Facebook. So they certainly keep things interesting, and I hope they always will.
Yeah. So let's dig into the work here. So what inspired you to create Life Fuels? And tell us a little bit about it for those of us in the audience who don't know.
Yeah, sure. So my inspiration to create the product stemmed from my wife at the time, sort of her struggle with health and nutrition during our third pregnancy. So in 2006, she was pregnant with Charlie, Charlize. We call her Charlie Bear. It's amazing when kids get nicknames based on their personality. She's mostly, right, mostly a teddy bear, but occasionally can pull out the grizzly or the polar bear. you know, she was supposed to be taking these gigantic prenatal vitamins every day, but they were a nuisance. And quite frankly, for those that have had to take them, it's tough enough to eat certain things, but to swallow horse pills when you're pregnant is challenging. So it seemed to me that there was a better way to do it and a more automated way, perhaps. So, you know, I came up with the idea of a bottle that would automatically provide sort of personalized doses of nutrients. And at the time, it meant that I mixed vitamin powder. Oxylent was the brand, similar to Emergen-C that's gained wider notoriety today. I would mix that in a water bottle, track it, jot it down, and help her to achieve the levels. And then Life Fuels was conceived back then, but it didn't come to life until 10 years later. I think timing with technology, startups, certainly consumer products, is critical to get timing right. So when, you know, my mother and her friends were using wearable trackers, caring a lot about their output, I kind of realized it's time, because input matters more. But now that people care about their output, you know, we can focus on this. So, you know, we had sort of back in 2016, I went to a industrial design firm that said, look, we'll help you build this product. The concept is cool, but it's going to cost you, you know, $500,000 to $1 million to design it. And then it might cost a few $1,000s to make each bottle. So wow. 10 years later, you know, we have the cost down significantly. It's affordable. And, you know, we're excited to basically bring Life Fuels to market. And I can certainly tell you more about Life Fuels, unless you have any questions about the early days.
Yeah, actually, I want to dig into something you said, because you said it very quickly, but I actually think it's really important to innovation. You said, you know, timing is everything. And it just brought up this memory for me of when I was living in New York, I lived in New York City for 6 years. And I think it was in 1999 or 2000, I can't remember. I had this brilliant idea. It's all of our ideas are brilliant, I'm sure, for this online fitness tracker called stayingfit.com. But the challenge I really ran into was that I was way ahead of customer behavior. The consumer was not doing it. So, you know, we weren't online the way we are today. If you think, you know, if you can imagine back to 2000, like the internet, we used it for work, but it wasn't what it is now. So, and you had said, you know, timing is everything. So I just want you to talk a little bit about that, because I do think there's so much importance in that, regardless of what your idea is, of what's happening in the marketplace, what the adoption patterns are, what behavior is as well. So can you dig into that a little bit?
Absolutely. I first have to say that in 99, I had a similar idea. It was, I got to know Sean Parker, because we worked together. And the other half of Napster was a company I co-founded called eTantrum. It was basically Shazam meets iTunes. And we put a lot of our eggs as young entrepreneurs into that Napster basket, which, you know, didn't work out, but I learned a ton from it. So I think we learned a lot from having missed timing. The one piece of advice I would say about this, you know, a lot of people try to reinvent the wheel when it comes to validating an idea or the timing of an idea. And I don't think that's necessary. You can utilize a method or one of many methods that are tried and tested. And I would invite people to try this, which is bring a group of people together that could be your intended audience of a website, an app, a hardware product, or a food service, whatever it is. Try to leverage like the lean canvas model, or do a lean startup machine weekend or a startup weekend, or we just recently did a Google sprint design, which is an amazing process at our office for one particular aspect of our platform. But after you've done those things, it will help you to direct your timing. So if people say, hey, this is great, but I already have this in this form factor, or wow, I mean, that seems neat, but it's far-fetched, then you can kind of get an idea. If you're talking to 10 or 20 people and 80% of them are leaning in direction, then timing may be perfect or it may be off. But I think, you know, we as entrepreneurs are creative when we have these great ideas, or what we think are great ideas, but until you validate them or try to with others, it's tough to know whether the timing is right or not. So I would just challenge people to test their ideas. There's a funny line. It's my favorite line in startup land. Anit Makin of LedgeSite says, you know, you think you have to protect your idea and, you know, you can't tell anyone, but at the end of, you know, at the end of the day, no one cares.
Right. Well, I have a whole, you know, soapbox around, you know, people come to me and say, well, I've patented. I'm like, well, that's great, but are you creating a defendable business? And are you out there actually, if you don't talk to people, you don't know. I'm 100% with you. To me, it's all about the experimentation, and that experimentation can't happen on a PowerPoint. It has to happen in market.
That's exactly right. And that's the key thing that a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize, particularly if they're first-time entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And I think that's actually, you know, I've seen that true in large companies too. Believe it or not, you know, they try to perfect it in the conference room. And by the time they get it to market, the smart entrepreneur is already out there doing it and has taken some of that share in that mind space before they even got around to it.
That's so true. I do have to say that the flip side of that in terms of intellectual property, I do think it's important to trademark an idea, you know, whether you have a slogan or a tagline. And in the case of Life Fuels, we did a lot of market research over a decade's worth. and realized that big beverage companies and those kind of the intersection of fitness and wellness were sniffing around the idea of a smart bottle. Some had already come to market with similar technologies, but mostly just to track hydration. So we actually didn't announce anything about the company. We were sort of in a stealth mode, which I don't recommend for most startups, but we had to until we realized what we would file in terms of patents. And I've advised people, like you said, don't worry about that. It's all about execution of the business. But at the time, we realized we're still figuring it all out. There's no benefit to us announcing anyway. Let's wait. And then we launched the company about a year later at CES last year. So after we had filed some patents. But.
Well, I think there's a balance. You're right. You have to protect yourself. And you have to get real-world feedback and advice and experimentation. You have to do both at the end of the day. So let's keep going because I want to talk a little bit about – I want to kind of – I don't know if this is a poke the bear question, but I've dug into Life Fuels because I knew we were having this conversation. I was excited to interview you. But talk a little bit about what makes it different because when I hear smart bottle and, you know, smart water and vitamins, the world of competition opens up in my mind.
Yeah, no question. It's a huge market globally. So – Life Fuels is a lot more than a bottle. Think of it as a platform that provides personalized beverages on the go. Users can make those beverages using what we call fuel pods. So they're multi-serving pods that dispense vitamins, energy drinks, pre-workout fuel, post-workout hydration, beverages to help you sleep, focus. What's really interesting is the market that understands the product. So this is, we mentioned earlier, CrossFit, yoga, yeah. You know, people that are really achieving, they look at this and say, oh my gosh, if you saw the stuff in my gym bag and the things spilling all over my car, you know, you built this product for me. And then there's sort of a mainstream market that may not have gotten the first version of the iPhone or the Fitbit, but they have it now several years later that will ultimately have a smart bottle. I believe, and I will say this firmly, that within a decade, everyone will have a smart bottle if they have a smartphone.
I love the big goal.
So here's the bottle pairs with, thank you. It syncs up with an app. It tracks not just your hydration, but Life Fuels tracks your nutrient consumption as well through the bottle. Ultimately, we'll deal with food, but right now, focus. For a person with ADD, it's very important to focus. So, you know, we have a ton of ideas of other products and they're on the roadmap, but right now it's about launching and getting the bottle to market. And for those that utilize wearable activity trackers, we integrate with Apple Watch, Fitbit, Misfit, Mio, and others so that the body receives what you need when you need it based on climate, activity, altitude. You know, if you're traveling to a humid area and you're running longer than you normally do, the bottle will dispense electrolytes and tell you why you need them. And the app also serves as one of two places to discover and purchase our fuel pods. So the first one is the app. The second one, of course, will be the website. But that's Life Fuels in a nutshell. Hmm.
So it sounds to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's coming from the consumer perspective, like you're kind of solving two problems for me. One is my lack of ability to actually take pills every day, you know, vitamins, even though they're sitting on my counter, and I know I should. And the second part is really, you know, and we talked about this offline, I'm part of that, you know, CrossFit group of I eat for performance, and it's all about performance and, you know, getting to that level. But also you're changing the behavior around how we get what we need and actually being right about what we need, for lack of a better way to say it. You know, I mean, sometimes I think we take these things, but we don't really know what we need.
That is a very good point. So in the future, imagine a day when you can submit your blood test results that show you may be deficient in some things like iron or vitamin D, or many of us are deficient in. And imagine a customized fuel pod that is sent to you that you consume based on the flavor that you like and what your body needs at all times. That's the vision, and that's where we're going. Ultimately, fuel pods will dispense over-the-counter medicines as well, and pharmaceuticals. Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
Why not also other things that you may want to, you know, there's sort of like occasions throughout the day where we have anywhere from 4 to 6 beverages we consume. For many people, it's tea and coffee in the morning, hopefully water and then tea and coffee. And then maybe in the evening, you know, there are other beverages, and our fuel pods come in a 1 ounce form factor. So imagine if you were a large spirits company, you would have probably already reached out to Life Fuels to say, when will alcohol be in these fuel pods? It's not something we'll be doing today, nor is it the ethos of the company to create more like party fuels than life fuels. But I think down the road, it will be inevitable that we'll get there.
So I have to say, for the innovators out there listening, whether in a large company or you're an entrepreneur, really pay attention to what Life Fuels and what Jonathan is doing here, because it's not just about solving a problem. I think that's not enough in today's marketplace. What you guys are really doing is creating a new behavior, a new way for us to do something that we need to do. And that's what I think makes lasting innovation and what makes a product, one of the things I think it makes a product successful in the marketplace. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, you can give me an alternative to what I'm already doing, or you can give me a new, better way to actually not just, you know, not a better vitamin, but a better way to get those vitamins too.
Exactly. And one that really allows you to hold yourself accountable or be adherent to the program that you're supposed to be on, which is one of the most challenging things for people to do. I have so many friends who say, you know, we buy vitamins at Costco or Sam's Club and they expire before we consume them all, and the expiration date's 3 years out. It's 90 days worth of pills. And so, yeah, of course, because we forget to take them, we put them in a cupboard. Our goal is to help people live healthier, happier, longer lives. And you'll have more energy throughout the day when you are aware of what your body needs, consuming and delivering it to your body. There's a physiological component that goes into this. And I think people will perform better as a result of using our product. And you know, we are all diehard about it because we believe and agree and are doing it ourselves now. So
nice. Well, so let's flip it a little bit. What were some of the biggest obstacles you faced in pursuing Life Fuels?
Well, so you know, I think there've been a lot more oh shit moments than sort of aha moments. We found a lot of problems along the way. So one of the interesting things is through the Google Design Sprint process, which we just did last week, we found problems we didn't know existed, and then solutions were created, you know, subsequently during the week and after to those problems. Sometimes if you don't know the obstacles you face are there, then that can really tank your business. It's like an iceberg ahead. So we originally had hoped to bring the bottle to market in 2016. And if you look at sort of Life Fuels plus CES, you'll see the prototype bottle that was multicolored and had a screen on it. That product was not ready to go to market. So it was designed in-house. The company received over 10 innovation awards or more in 2016 for the product. And it really, the obstacle was, it seemed difficult to make this decision at the time because the fuel pod and the fuel pods in the bottle were validated. People wanted it. But the decision I had to make and the sort of obstacle that was before me was actually killing that bottle.
Oh.
Not bringing it to market. That was one of the toughest decisions as CEO I've had to make because a lot went into it in terms of money and resources and time and vision. But the second best decision that we made at Life Fuels, my co-founder Rob Lawson Shanks, who's also CTO, and I made was at CES. And it's interesting, if I can just share this story, it sounds like a joke, but you know, we were at the front of the booth. Talk about serendipity. It was the only time that Rob and I had been at the front of the booth the entire week of CES. We were in meetings with beverage companies and healthcare partners and wearable companies. But we were at the front of the booth and these four gentlemen walked up and they basically, it's two Brits, an Irishman and a Scot walked into our booth. And this is a true story. And they said, you know, hey, congratulations. We read about you guys on your awards, your innovation awards. We have some feedback. Could we share it with you? And Rob and I were smiling, looking at each other because we'd been talking about the fact that, you know, we could have gone to market with that product, but we don't feel like it would have been our best foot forward. And we think we actually would have failed with that product. So we're pretty sure we would have. And we said, absolutely, we'd love to hear. And everything they said as they passed it around from one person to the next were the things that we knew were wrong with it. And I think the second best decision we made was partnering with that firm. It's DCA Design. They're in the UK. They've been around 50 years. And the piece that we were not best at, we're great at technology, software and hardware, but the piece that they're amazing at is consumer products. So they've done more work with dispensing of aerosols, liquids, medicines like Flonase, EpiPens, and others, insulin injectors, than any company we could find. And it was that piece to help us with the precise measurement and dispensing that we really needed. And they also have an incredible partner to us. So you know, the biggest obstacle we faced was sort of solved because we ran into a group that we are now partnered with.
So let me ask you a question about Killing It, because a friend and an entrepreneur that I admire, I don't know if you've heard of him, Steven Sashin, he founded Zero Shoes, so a shoe company based on barefoot running concept. And he's been on Shark Tank and has an incredibly successful business. And I was interviewing him a while back, and one of the things he said to me was, you know, people often entrepreneur themselves into the ground. And I think the willingness to kill your baby is really hard and really important. So will you talk a little bit about your mental process for, you know, how that was for you and then kind of what it felt like on the other side? Because I do think it is something that we are, as entrepreneurs, and particularly if we're, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries of innovation, it's so hard yet so important.
Yeah, sure. So, no, that's so true. I think the way that my mind works is I just can see sort of the steps, especially with something I've been thinking about for a decade. I can see the steps and understand sort of the scenarios that could play out. And I tried to play out dozens of scenarios with that product. And the issues we were having and some of our brand ambassadors and partners that were, you know, holding and using the bottle were having were issues that they were accepting of the fact that this was really a prototype. They loved the fact that it was there and they could dispense from it. And wow, I can touch my phone, press a button on my phone. The bottle is 3 feet away on a table and I can see it, you know, dispense liquid, and it's delicious and everything works. Well, that was great. But what I realized was the average consumer really needs something very different. They need simple, convenient. They need it to be economical, healthy, and it has to be great for the environment. So when you decide to take innovation to the next level, you also have to realize, I think, and many entrepreneurs have a hard time with this, I know because I've invested in a lot of them, and I support many in conversation and sitting down strategically. They forget that innovation can exist with the help of others. You don't have to do it all yourself. And so when we decided to partner with DCA, we opened up a whole new world to a firm that's been around 50 years solving similar problems for the biggest consumer products brands in the world. So I think that, you know, I'm not sure that I'm answering directly. I think that innovation means a lot of things to a lot of people, but you get into a lot of trouble if it only means one thing to you without a team, without people who have experience in that space. You know, it's why advisors and mentors and investors in companies should have the experience that's, you know, sometimes priceless for entrepreneurs to be able to tap into.
Yeah, that's really well said. I mean, innovation is, there isn't one right way to do it. And more than likely, the stronger ideas come out of collaboration.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think that does answer. I mean, I just think killing it is hard. And we know it in the back of our minds, like this is not going to work, whatever it is. And we have to move forward. So I want to ask you another question though about LifeFuel, because it's a really new to the world concept on one hand, yet on the other hand, it is very basic and fundamental, right? It's water, it's vitamins, it's a bottle, you know, type structure that we understand. And one of the things I see with these type of things is there can sometimes be a really long learning curve for customers. You know, you have to educate them, you've got to get them all to work to get from, you know, point A to point Z where you're trying to take them. And often having an anchor or a handle, something that people can go, oh, that part's familiar to me while that part is new to me. How have you, with LifeFuel, how have you overcome that learning curve or worked to educate your market?
That's an amazing question. So two-part answer, I think. The first is the market is being educated for us in many ways on behalf of other products that already exist that are doing a couple of things. One, tracking hydration. So there are a dozen products out there that can help you to be hydrated throughout the day, and they're connected to apps or they're not, but that's great. So they're educating the market. People are buying them. The other thing is water bottles used to just be free or cost a few dollars, but We're very fortunate that Swell and other companies are teaching people to spend $50, or in the case of Yeti, $100 for a water bottle. So people are becoming accustomed to that. The second part, which is directly related to Life Fuels, is that the prototype had two buttons, a screen, and sort of, you know, it was a prototype. It was done internally. It was a little complicated. The new product, and we've heard this from one of the largest tech companies in the world that we hope to partner with by the end of the year, looked at it and said, wow, that looks like an iPhone. There's one button and it's clearly a top and I clearly drink out of it. And let me look at the bottom. Oh, wow. There's three things that look like Nespresso or Keurig pods in there. So it's really simple to understand now in the user interface, which we've been testing for months with actual users, of the product. They're sort of interacting and saying, wow, if I depress the button and hold it down, it dispenses. But I like the fact that if I touch it lightly, it flips through the pods.
I had to laugh a little bit when you're talking about water bottles being expensive, because just this morning, my 8-year-old and I were talking. We were looking for water bottles for him to take to school, and somehow they've all disappeared in my house. They always do. And they're all the cheap ones. And I said to my son, we need to go buy some more water bottles. And he goes, oh, they're just so expensive. That was the funniest thing coming from an 8-year-old. All right. I have so many things I could talk to you about with Life Fuel, but I want to switch gears because you do a lot of other things in the startup world as well, including you co-created a documentary called Startup Land. Will you talk to us a little bit about what it is and what we see when we watch it?
Sure. So we created it based on the fact that there was not much content out there for people to learn about what real entrepreneurs do. So I was running a small venture fund in DC at the time. We operated a tech accelerator, as you mentioned during the intro, and we had really searched for content that would support founders in their journey. But the only things we could find were reality TV, which, as we know, is not real. Like Shark Tank, which is a great show. It's entertaining. I watch it with my children. I urge others.
But it's entertaining.
It's entertainment, right. So, so we decided to capture the journey of five founding teams from when they joined the accelerator through the process to demo day, or what we called investor day, which is kind of a graduation from an accelerator. And what's really interesting is along the way, it took like 3 days and we just forgot the camera was there. Like in the first day, no one wanted to be around the cameras. And we just wanted to capture this. And Justin does an amazing job of capturing footage, editing footage. And you know, we brought this thing to life in a series and then in a film. What's great is we had the opportunity, because we're in DC, to partner with a number of organizations to get this film out to others around the world. So the United Nations Foundation, Startup America, at the time Techstars, World Bank, and a number of others. So we could really help educate, you know, change makers, innovators, entrepreneurs around the world. As it turns out, almost 100,000 people have now watched it, but a lot of them asked us, you know, could you do more? Is there something else we can watch or learn from? And so we went back to the drawing board and I hired a team to do this. I'm not involved day to day, obviously, with Startup Land. It's a company that I own and I have a great team working on it. But we created an online course. It's a 15-week curriculum. And just this year, January, Virginia Tech decided to sign up and are teaching it using the course for students. In sort of an iScholars program. So these are students that want to be entrepreneurs or learn about innovation. So it's really exciting that it's out there, sort of a legacy that Justin, myself, and everyone involved in Fortify sort of leave behind. But we thought it would just be an end, and it's not really an end because it's done some good and people want more from it. So that's why we've had to sort of invest more time and money and energy into it. To bring the online course to life, but really excited about that and what everything that it offers, and hopefully, you know, what it ultimately becomes.
That's very cool. And we will be sure to put a link to that in the show notes as well, so that if you're out there and you're thinking, not only do I want to see this incredible documentary, but I also need the course, that they can get access to that as well. I'm curious, you know, when you were, I'm going to fumble this question, but hopefully it'll make sense as I get through it. When you were living it day to day and the cameras are on, right, that's one thing. Was there anything after the editing, after it was produced, after watching it, that made you go, God, I didn't realize that lesson was coming out at that moment, right? I didn't know that was happening, that pattern existed, you know, until you had that hindsight.
You know, I wasn't really involved in the editing. Justin had free rein to sort of go and edit, or like I wouldn't have probably put myself in chowing a salmon salad, forgetting that the film.
So there's lesson number one: yeah. Don't eat in front of the camera.
That's right. We were in a restaurant. Justin decided to follow us in, so it's a fun scene actually. Dave Adickman from the Trip Tribe and I were having a conversation. And I said, "Look, you just open a convertible note, you go out and raise money," and he's like, "Wait, slow down. What's a convertible note?" This is a guy who graduated from Harvard, who helped start the Department of Homeland Security and run multi-billion dollar budgets. And, you know, it's his first time as an entrepreneur and he was vulnerable.
Right.
It's just so, he's one of my favorite people, actually. So a lot of that stuff's captured. I didn't realize till afterward when Justin was editing and we spent literally every day, we spent an hour for over a year. So looking at every scene. And yes, there were moments where you kind of look back and say, I said that or what?
Yeah.
What was I thinking? Or that's good advice. I should listen to it myself. That's come up a few times. You know, and it's funny, my kids were part of the process. So they watched it with me because they were interested and they, you know, they know a lot about a lot of the entrepreneurs. They know Justin really well and others that were involved. And there are two moments where there are not nice words spoken. And right before that, my kids just are trained now. They know the words. They have heard them before, but they just put their earmuffs on with them, cover their ears. But it's really, you know, what's interesting is we went to a level with the film that as I look back, I don't know that we needed to, but I'm glad that we did. So we created our own soundtrack. Justin had a band he loved in Indiana where he grew up and they created, you know, literally all of the sounds in the film are owned by the film, but were also uniquely created for the film. We created digital animations and had someone come in to sort of explain. People don't always understand what a capitalization table is. And a capitalization table is sort of the breakdown of who owns what stock, stock options, convertible notes, how investors become owners in a company. When it goes public, it's still called a capitalization table. And, you know, Michael Chasen, who founded Blackboard and is now running his second company since then, Blackboard was acquired for over $1 billion. Michael sort of breaks that down in under 2 minutes and does such a good job of it that we said, okay, let's animate this. And now I've had people from all over the world say, I had no idea what stock ownership was until I watched Startup Land, and now a cap table makes sense to me. So, you know, in hindsight, I wish we had done some more of that with other theories and other known entities if you've done it a few times. But we do that with the curriculum, which is good.
Well, it sounds like one of the lessons that came out of it that maybe you didn't know as you were living it is all of these acronyms and language and things that when you're new to the startup world, you have no idea what they are. And you're embarrassed to ask because you should know. At least that's how you feel. So it's great that that kind of came out of in Startup Land as well as the curriculum to back that up. So let's take it to more of a personal level, I guess. What matters most to you in life? And what I'm particularly interested in is how do you measure success? And the reason I'm asking is because I think there's the obvious monetary, but I find that people who are true innovators tend to have success measures that go far beyond that.
Yeah, sure. So, I really believe what matters in life most, and my parents instilled this in my brothers and I, family first, health second, happiness. Maybe you can interchange happiness and health. I actually love exceptional cuisine, art that inspires. I'm a big fan of travel. But I measure success lately probably based on how many hours of sleep I'm getting.
So important.
Yeah. And I'm serious about that. I mean, one of the things that I still wear a Fitbit for, in addition to many other products, we love Garmin, I'm using Apple Watch. Is because I do believe it tracks sleep very well, and my children have them, so we kind of compare and contrast. And if we have a rough day, we say, "Well, we went to bed a little too late," or we're hangry. It's one of the two. So
hangry. That happens a lot in my house.
Yeah, of course. But you know, I think from a young age, I've measured success mostly based on freedom. I've never really cared about the gold tokens. I was worth more than my parents in my 20s and didn't even realize it till my 30s. I don't really care about that as much. My ex-wife is now worth a lot more than I am because I keep diving my shekels back into startups.
Yeah.
But to me, I think success really is based on freedom. And to me, entrepreneurship is really a form of freedom. But the flip side of that that's kind of crazy is I think only people that have operated a company or an entity, they've run an organization of some kind that they founded, it's sort of an odd phenomenon where you find yourself imprisoned in a way inside the madness and the challenges of what you created. So you create your own company or your own organization, yeah. but at times you feel trapped. It's kind of nuts. And I've seen that many times. So I think, you know, measuring success to me has to be twofold. There's my personal life, which is much more important and has to do with all those loved ones that I cherish. And then sort of this business side, which has many facets, that, you know, I need to make sure I don't imprison myself, but I've seen others do that and it's frightening at times.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because we've had accelerated growth this year we laid a lot of foundation last year and it's really paying off. And on one hand, I'm extremely excited about it. On the other hand, some days I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I have no freedom, you know, and I have to work through my own little mental game of what success means and what I'm looking to accomplish and how I'm going to balance it all. But it's a very funny, I think the way you said it is absolutely right. I never thought of it that way, but it's this funny balance between trying to achieve the things you want to achieve. And then when you get them, feeling, like you said, a little bit confined by them at the same time.
Yeah, it's a very interesting phenomenon. And I think one of the things that's really important, and it's sort of a piece of advice if I would give to any entrepreneur, people say it's lonely at the top, sort of as this statement, it's a badge of honor or courage or something you just have to get through. But I think it's really unhealthy. And there are a lot of mental health issues associated with that. And there have been suicides widely known of acclaimed entrepreneurs because they just can't put up with it anymore. And it's terribly sad. It's sad in any industry or in any way. But I think that having a peer group, and there are many of them, some of them are free, some of them are expensive. You know, there's YPO, EO, Vistage. In DC, we have NetCito, and Maverick is one that I've been a member of. And we just started a new one, a CPG one. We're meeting for the first time this month, focused on consumer packaged goods. I think having a team that you can just vent with and, you know, it's all confidential and you get together monthly and you have people that are going through similar things, do that together. I think that has helped others I've known sort of escape that feeling of being imprisoned because they're able to, well, maybe be imprisoned together. I don't know. Yeah. It certainly helped me.
Well, I do think in that when you're kind of in those places, when you're trying to, let me back up. When you have a colleagues to share with, sometimes just getting it off your chest is all you need. And then you realize, hey, wait, this isn't so bad. This is really great. You just need to work through it mentally sometimes. So what do you do for inspiration when you feel stuck in a rut or, you know, just not as motivated?
Yeah. So I call my mom. If ever I need to get really unstuck, I call my dad. So mom is inspiration and words of wisdom. She sort of has ingrained in me this Charles Swindoll poem of attitude. And I just try every day to live by that. Attitude is everything. And I teach my kids that. Their mother believes that as well. But if I'm stuck in a weird situation, I call my best friend, my dad, or my brothers. And, you know, sometimes what's really odd, my brother Mark and I are really close. We've had a few companies together. In fact, I started SecureForce. I ran it for several years and then he ran it for the last few. But when I'm having a rough time, there's this really weird thing that happens. I call him and I end up making him laugh, like belly laugh where he gets an ab workout. And that relieves my stress. So I don't know how that happened. I just sort of realized that the other day. And I'm really fortunate to have just an incredible family and incredibly supportive friends. And in my current trajectory with Life Fuels, incredibly supportive investors. So, you know, inspiration from mom, unstuck from dad and others. But yeah, that's kind of how it rolls for me.
I love it. There is something, I do that to my sister. I make her laugh and it just, I don't know, there's something about it that makes me laugh in return. But so, you know, you had said in the beginning that you're divorced, you're a single father, three young children. How does that impact your life as an entrepreneur and your role as a parent too? Because, you know, both of those are all consuming in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no question. So, my ex-wife and I made a conscious decision to do what was best for the kids years ago, and we did something called nesting. We had the plan to be in a house for 1 year where we would slowly transition the kids to, you know, mom's not there the next morning, and then, you know, we're all there at night, and the next morning dad's not there. And we, you know, we'd have a few different places, the house they live in, and then two other places to go to. Long story short, we did that for 3 years. And while we're going through a separation and divorce, so we, as a result, became good friends, which is what we were when we first met. And she's now, I mean, she's the greatest ex-wife I'll ever have, the only one I've had, but she is one of my close friends, actually. We travel together by choice. We've remained a family in a weird way, like her mom and I are close. She vacations with my parents at their home on occasion. So while it's kind of strange to people, it's not normal, certainly. It's uniquely wonderful for us. And if it weren't for our friendship, I would never be able to do what I do as an entrepreneur. There's no question. She's incredibly flexible. She's an attorney who, you know, has offices in a couple locations, but sometimes works from home. So she's mostly on bus duty in the afternoons. And if she needs to travel, I support her. We just have a really good situation. We intentionally live in the same neighborhood. And we're both incredibly actively involved in the lives of all three of our kids. So, you know, it's, don't get me wrong, it's really hard. I'm not saying that, oh, it's just la-di-da. It's hard as hell, actually, being a single parent. There are days I would pull all of my hair out if I had any, but I don't. But the bottom line is that even though the company is really important, we do put family first, and we help each other to do that. So it's a flexible, supportive kind of, you know, great situation. And then at work, work is a family too. You know, I actually have, I'm very fortunate to have a team that, and really an empowering culture at Life Fuels that, that just works really well. So, and they're all aware of my situation as I am theirs, those others that have children. Yesterday we had someone really important meeting, someone's kid was sick. We postponed the meeting. I mean, it's just life takes precedence, especially when it's family.
Well, and what I hear you say, and what I 100% agree with, and, you know, people listening really need to take this to heart, is it takes a village in work and in personal life. And you got to get that support network around you to make it all work, because there's a lot to do on both sides, and you need, both need your time and attention, but you need the network to help you keep going. So what's one piece of advice for people out there trying to shake things up?
You know, I think that the most important thing you can do is have a great team. I know a lot of people that try to do it on their own. Some succeed. Others fail in a happy way, because then they find themselves and find others to join them on their journey. But I believe the best advice I could give anyone is, if, especially if you're trying to shake things up, ergo sort of disrupting an industry or anything in particular, I think surround yourself by people who care about the same vision. They want to execute the mission in a similar way, and they are as excited every day to you know, jump out of bed or jump into solving problems together. People say this a lot because it's true. It's really all about the team. So anything you're trying to do, I would recommend not trying to do alone.
Yeah, I think the whole inventor in the garage lone myth is exactly that. It's a myth. It's always more than one person. It has to be. So I know we're coming to the end here. So my last question for you is, what's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you? A hobby, passion, experience?
An experience. I once rode a pretty crappy motorcycle in the Himalayas on what was really the most dangerous roads I've ever seen or ever been on. And it was before my brother and I did this with a few other people. Eight of us signed up for the trip. Five of us got on the motorcycles. Three of us finished. So one of the bikes went off a cliff. Another person just gave up because he had three kids at home. It was much more treacherous than we thought. And quite honestly, I didn't want to, once we got on the bikes and I saw the roads, I was in my mid-20s, but I told my brother, I said, you know, I'm not doing this. This is like a death wish. And I'm really glad that I did, as glad that I finished the trip, but it was a few weeks on these old 500cc bullets, these Enfields that were like 50-year-old frames. You know, we should have been on much better bikes, but the experience of traveling through and seeing a part of the world, you know, Tibet, Sikkim, Darjeeling, Gangtok, Siliguri, this whole area nestled between India and Nepal and Tibet was pretty amazing. I just love to travel. So I think, I don't know if that's surprising, but that's one of my experiences.
I'm not, surprising as shocking more so, like what you did, what? That's awesome. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us today. I know we kind of went over what I was intending time-wise for our discussion, but I think there's a lot of great gems of insight in your wisdom and your experience. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.